Hello everyone, welcome along to the last mailbag of the season. Today we get the pleasure of discussing the brand new Cambridge United retained list, which dropped at midday today at the time of recording. And we're going to talk FA Cup replays, and we're going to talk the best and worst non-British players for Cambridge United. So a right mix in today's mailbag. I'm joined by Tom Walker. It's the first two-man mailbag we've done, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm looking forward to dissecting this, particularly the retain list, and then delving through the archive, shall we say, for parts of the mailbag. But yeah, it's good to be back again.
Of course, mate. One of the last shows of the year. We're really, I think moods are a bit higher now that we're not, you know, analysing week to week defeats and to be honest, not having the same question come in, which is who should we keep next season? That question has now been answered.
It's now very much who should we have kept for next season?
Yeah. We can now go very much to criticising the retained list. No, I don't think that is what we're going to be doing today. Let's go through it then. So, Cambridge United retained list for 2024 announced today. The players, let's just go through it. Players under contract: Danny Andrew, Paul Digby, George Hoddle, Zeno Ibsen-Rossi, Michael Morrison, Jack Stevens, George Thomas. I think as a seven, I'm fairly pleased with that myself.
Good seven-a-side team.
Great seven-a-side team. Yeah, all positions. No, there's no
arguably arguably not the sort of spine of a promotion-winning League One team, but
arguably not.
We're ready to see what's going to happen there.
Well, it's a seven-a-side team with George Thomas being absolutely crocked at the moment. So
yeah, he's on the sideline with a can.
Yeah, he'll get the ref to play for us or something.
he's playing the Tom Walker role, which is good to see.
Someone's always got to do it. Always good to have a Thomas. Morrison and Andrew are the two sort of talking points here quickly that I think we were just discussing off air, that there wasn't any confirmation, I think, that we'd seen that they'd actually extended an extra year, because Morrison signed an 18-month deal last January, it's the season before, which obviously takes us to this summer, and Danny Andrew just a one-year deal last year. So someone listening probably has some more intel, Tom, but it looks like they've extended an extra year, which I think we're all pretty fairly happy with, right?
Yeah, 100%. I guess there too that there wouldn't have been much doubt that we would have looked to have retained anyway. And I think probably because of the stage of their career they're at, they probably would have stayed anyway. So, you know, it would have been nice to know why they're still here, definitely under contract, but not a surprise to see them stay. But yeah, I think, you know, you might have a bit of debate around Morrison, but I think, you know, when we get on to Liam Bennett as well, I think that's two of your back four or five sorted. So it's a good start. And then obviously Rossi's still there as well. But yeah, they're the experience, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exciting to see young George Hoddle in there as well, getting a few minutes towards the end of the season. So hopefully he has a bit of an impact next season. But I think let's get into the real talking points. Players departing at the conclusion of their contract. Obviously the sad case of Harrison Dunk was already well aware to all of us. Unfortunately, Harrison Dunk will obviously leave the football club after, you know, record appearances over the last 30 years, or we've been through all this already. So this is not the time or the place, but obviously it goes with all our best wishes as friend of the pod as well. Ryan Bennett, at the conclusion of his contract, what do you make to him leaving?
I think it's something that Casper mentioned last time we were on, when we were sort of looking ahead to the retain list. I think we looked at certain parts of the pitch, particularly centre-back and centre-mid, and we kind of thought that the two in each position have been most prominent. So Morrison and Bennett, and then Cousins and Digby. You're probably making a choice of one. And if Morrison's under contract, then it makes sense to let Ryan Bennett go. I think if you look at that sign-in, you know, came in last January when the club was pretty much staring League Two down the, you know, kind of staring at it like they're staring down the barrel of a gun, really. I think, you know, he was certainly a net positive on us while he was here, but I think we saw in the last sort of 8-10 weeks of the season, there's a player in there that maybe is kind of falling apart the sides just a little bit, cracks starting to show. And when I couple that with certain incidents, you know, you could argue isolated incidents, but quite telling incidents nonetheless, where he just simply didn't look interested, it makes me question whether he would have been a good person to kind of pin your survival hopes on for next season. So I think he's one, and this is something I guess it will come up time and time again as we go through the rest of the list. But I think, you know, the kind of the rationale that you have for keeping or getting rid of someone is fundamentally do we back ourselves to upgrade on them or at least get someone of a similar quality who can offer something else as well. And I think Ryan Bennett's one where fundamentally I think if you're going to be successful next season, you have to back yourself. You can bring in a player who's at least as good and hopefully someone maybe who can contribute for the longer term as well. Because, we just talked about the ones that are under contract already. I don't think any of them, probably Hoddle aside, you would pin your longer term hopes on probably just next season and maybe not even that, to be honest with you. So I think it's important we look to that. And Bennett's a victim of that, I think.
Yeah, I think that's spot on, to be honest. You look at, we talked about how poor the balance of this squad is, and I think there's some of this. I'm not going to, dead weight is probably the wrong word, but I think you'll see what I mean. There's some of this that's got to be addressed, that imbalance. So, like you say, Bennett's the victim. And I think it's interesting with him that, I think you were spot on there, actually, that he's been a net positive on this football club. But it's interesting how he sort of became famed for his lack of like interaction with fans or sort of any caring about anything other than the game of football happening in front of him, like scoring a goal, no celebration. But how quickly that just sort of turned into disassociation, and how when results go wrong and then his performances start to dip, that disassociation and that lack of like engagement can actually become quite tiring as well. So I'm not saying that that's a big reason why I should let him go. And I think if his performance level's there, I don't really give a, I'd give a,
Yeah,
I don't care if he celebrates or not.
I think like last season that was actually quite refreshing in a way,
Yeah. Yeah, yeah,
because
yeah.
if anything, if you can have too much of that, we did have too much of that was just kind of like, basically, for want of a better phrase, just basically passion merchants, who maybe didn't have the required ability. We don't need to go into names, but I think there's plenty of examples of it throughout last season's squad up until January. And if anything, when Ryan Bennett came in, it was like, it's actually just good to have a grown up in the building who just wants to come
Yeah.
and do his job and go home, which he was doing quite effectively. But yeah, I think when we lost a few of these players who had such an association with the club, we were kind of yearning for that from somewhere. And yeah, Ryan Bennett was not forthcoming. So yeah, it's probably a fair point.
Yeah, it's also important to just remember that I think is he put his foot in it quite a few times this season. I'm thinking about Shrewsbury at home, Northampton away. I think what I would describe uncharacteristically, considering the player who came in last year, or unexpectedly, he put in quite a few poor performances. So yeah, I totally agree with your assessment of that. I think we can definitely do better next year, and I don't think it's a huge surprise to see him go. Also, probably one of our highest earners, so makes sense all round. How about Brandon Hounstrup?
Where'd you start of a guy like Brandon Hounstrup? We
What
could do a pod about him on his own.
an incredible career this guy has had at Cambridge United, by the way. Like, I'm talking about this for a second.
I think it's a fair shout to say he's the worst signing we've ever made.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Oh, it has to be up there.
He's a, like, you know, obviously we watch Cambridge United week in, week out, so we feel like we come to recognise these players quite well. If Brandon Hounstrup was in my house, I wouldn't recognise him.
Eight league appearances in 2 seasons.
Oh, memorable, though.
I think one start at Pompey at the start
Yeah,
of last
the
season.
bad
Is that
one.
right? Yeah, the bad one. Yeah.
Lost, I think a 4-1 loss. A lot of goals, his fault. But thanks, Brandon. Thanks for coming. We
Yeah,
wish
good
the
job.
best in the future. That's the thing that I like on the tweets and on the press releases with it. It's like, we'd like to sincerely place on record our very best wishes for everyone who's departed the Football Club. And I think we can factually say for at least a couple of them leaving, that's just simply not true.
Yeah, I saw a bloke on Twitter who I follow. I can't remember who it was now, but some like EFL, person, and he was like doing like best transfers for this summer for some club, and
Ely City.
it was no, it was a League Two team. It was like who was it? It was like Gillingham. It was Gillingham, and it was like left back Brandon Hounstrup, and the first line was like, had a tough run of it at Cambridge. I was like, yeah, you don't say, mate. This is a guy.
I
This
wish
is
he had a
a guy
tough
who.
run of it. He didn't have a run at all. That was a problem. But best wishes to Gillingham for anyone listening next season if that does materialise.
Does teach you to take those articles with the biggest pinch of salt. Another guy who's had a sparkling, glittering career at Cambridge United is James Holden. I'm going to struggle to get a minute out of this chat, but Tom, let me throw you a hospital pass. What do you make to
That's
that?
a tough one. You're going to struggle to get a minute out of it. I'm going to struggle to get any like a single word out of it. Yeah. I don't, fair
It's
play,
the Partridge gif, isn't it?
Yeah. It does get you thinking. Actually, I guess if you want to have a take on it, it does get you thinking of all the players that have passed through this football club over the years that have made little or no impact. And I guess when James Holden signed for us, whenever that was, he probably would have sorely hoped that that wasn't going to be him. But alas, here we are. I'm sure he'll move on to other things.
There is a seriously good like 11 to be made out of players like James Holden. I can't quite put my finger on what like that category is, but maybe it's a mailbag question for next season or the summer or something. Like what players have signed and been here for 2 years and made zero appearances or something. Anyway, here's a guy that I think you will have a take on, because I know God knows you've had enough takes on this guy over the years. Sekou Janda, a guy who quite remarkable to think back at the start of the season that the first couple of games, first two wins against Oxford and Fleetwood. I remember listening to Not the Top 20 around that time, and then singling out the unpredictability, I think they called it, of Janna in those games, where I think we scored identical goals, right? Where he had a shot out of nowhere that straight at the keeper that was palmed out towards one time Lancaster, one time Digby, I think. But yeah, like Janna, not. I mean, I thought. I thought at times there were moments to defend him, and I thought there were just little glimmers of like a player in him, and the unpredictability is correct. But I think if you look at the way his career's gone, his season's gone, especially this year, especially under Harrison Monk, I think you probably see that there's maybe not quite enough quality in there. Is that a fair way of putting it?
Yes, I think that's a very fair way of putting it. I mean, to his credit, he started this season like a house on fire.
Yeah, he did.
You rightly say, like, he was a massive part of, I think, the win against Oxford and at Fleetwood.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I mean, we were like, maybe we were wrong.
Yeah.
And then the season progressed, and it turned
It
out we
was
were
a
actually.
conversation we were having then. Let's just point that out. Like, we were saying, like, he's playing really well. Let's not just, like, sit here and totally, like, kick this guy about. But yeah, you're right. The season progressed and.
Yeah, we were very much proven right.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think, players like that, they need a good run, you feel. If that's not too simplistic a point to make. And look, for whatever reason, he just never got that. Usually because of poor form, let's be honest. But the start of this season, I think he got absolutely hammered by Stevenage. I think in that first Tuesday night game at the Abbey,
Yeah.
and that was one where you kind of felt at that time like he needed the momentum of getting through a game like that, and he got injured, and the rest was kind of history. Never quite found that form again. But I think he's one that I guess you just kind of file under. Worked really hard. Seemed like a really likable guy, probably in and around the dressing room, and I know a big section of our fan base really warmed to him, but just simply didn't quite have it, really. But that's not to say that he can't go on and do well. Like, you assume that he will probably drop down a level or maybe a couple of levels, but
Yeah.
sometimes people have to go back a step to go forward too. So yeah, we'll see what happens with Sekou Janda.
Yeah, Ely City is a great club as well, so I'm sure he'll have a brilliant time down
A
there.
famous old club.
Famous old club, the Robins. Fajiri Okunibere. Now, I think this is an interesting case because it was an interesting case for different reasons this time last year, in that he'd been offered a deal, and I think a few people were slightly on the fence about it, given his injury record. It's just a shame, Tom, for him, that it's that same reason that I think has come to bite him this summer, because I think it's fair to say, I think most United fans can see the quality in him, can see the fact that there's a goal scorer in there, that he's a very good footballer, I think. He just can't stay fit long enough, right?
Yeah, it's a shame. And I think you kind of feel sorry for him just more generally, really. Because you think of like the amount of work and effort and sacrifice and dedication he must have put in to get from where he was, which I think was like in the non-league, I think with Dagenham, I think I'm right in saying, like all the way up to League One, and actually was quite a promising League One striker. And then to have had pretty much like 4 years totally wasted through injury. And there's one at Shrewsbury, one at Doncaster, and obviously now two with us, where he's contributed in sort of stops and starts, but never enough, and was just never available enough. That said, he managed to sort of play his part in a couple of picking up a few points earlier on this season, and yeah, like again, like he's one of those players that will just kind of fade into the list of like if only they could stay fit, because there's no doubt that if Fajiri Okunibere is fit for even like 35 games a season, or could make an appearance in them and being, you know, have a decent level of match fitness, like you would sign him again for another year, no doubt, and you'd probably be guaranteeing yourself a double figure return from him in terms of goals. The fact of the matter is, like, we know beyond any question now that that's just simply not going to happen. And I don't really know, like, what the fix is for that sort of thing, because it feels like his body's just let him down time and time and time again. I suppose, is it like, do you drop down like so far that you're doing like part-time football, so there's like less kind of strain on your body? I don't know, but you know, it feels like it's a really disappointing one, you know, for him more than anything, because it's just simply not a case of quality at all. It's not a case of having a player that is good enough. It's just a case that they can't get near the pitch often enough. Yeah, it's a shame.
It's a real shame. I think he genuinely goes with my best wishes. I hope next season I see him at, don't know, someone at the top of the National League or the bottom of League Two maybe, and firing him in. And not that I think we'd regret our decision, because I still think the for the reasons you've just stated, it's the right decision. But yeah, all the best for Jiri. A man who coming up, who I don't think we will be saying all the best to, is a certain Mr. Lyle Taylor. Now, you warned me just before the show, Tom, that I might need to get the old bleep button out for this man. What do you make to him?
Yeah, he's a isn't he? Let's be honest.
Brilliant.
Yeah, please do bleep that out. We are sort of a family show. Yeah, I mean, we, you know, sort of had a mini say about him after obviously our survival was secured. But yeah, just an absolute helmet of a bloke. Been proven wherever he's gone. No doubt about the ability. Like, if you could give Lyle Taylor's fitness to Fagioli or Kanabira, my God, you'd do it in a heartbeat. Because if ever there's been a bloke with the ability and everything going for him, but just lacks any sort of common sense or wherewithal to just be a, you know, a reasonable human being, I think it's him. So yeah, we'll see what happens with Lyle Taylor. I don't think there's many clubs at a decent level that are gonna touch him with like a 70-foot barge pole. But all the best to him at like Wimbledon or wherever it is he's inevitably gonna go. And you know, he's fundamentally gonna have to be somewhere where nobody's gonna say a bad word about him, because otherwise he'll start crying like a 4-year-old again. So yeah, good luck, Lyle.
I look forward to the day when we look on Twitter and we see Wimbledon's fan base have also turned against him, because that
It will
would really hit the
happen. It
full
will
house. It will
happen. Like,
happen next season,
you know it will.
100%.
You know it will, because
100%.
it's one of those things. Like, there's such a track record of it. Like, you just wouldn't touch him. Like, if you're a sensible club, I think someone like Wimbledon, where he's still really highly regarded, like, it's the only place he can go. Because you have to go somewhere where people have already got like a really positive impression of you, or at least to some extent a positive impression, despite all the sort of evidence to the contrary that's come out in the sort of 7 or 8 years since he left that football club. But that's another story. It's not for us to worry about anymore. He started like a house on fire. Harris left, and he turned to shit, and bottled just really big moments at key times. You know, you think of the Bolton game, that obviously was frustrating in itself because he got himself sent off there. Totally needlessly, totally fairly as well, despite the fact that by all accounts it was him pushing to appeal that without having actually seen it back, which is really frustrating. Despite the fact that was absolutely ridiculous. That means that he bottled the Posh game, left us in a really bad spot for the 3 games that followed that. And then obviously Wickham at home, like you've got a golden chance. You're 1-0 up, 10 minutes to go. Just see the game out, and you're safe. It doesn't go down to the last day. There's no unnecessary shenanigans, and he literally can't even just stay out of the headlines just for that. Gives away a penalty against his old team, and alas, it goes to the last day. Thankfully, it was fine. But yeah, not one that we're going to miss, I don't think. Although inevitably, I'm going to be really annoyed here in like November time when he scored for us against some no mark sort of part-time team against us at the Abbey, and he's celebrating in front of us. So yeah, at least I'll be over it, but that might reopen a wound.
Yeah, Wimbledon in the cup could suddenly be a bit of a spicy affair, couldn't it? I would say best of luck, Lyle, but you know, sort yourself out, mate. Players offered a new contract. I think let's run through these now, because I think there's a couple of interesting cases in here. Let's start with James Brophy. Now, he was the case that we were speaking about on the pod that we thought was going to be the most interesting. Are you surprised that he's been offered a contract?
I'm not really. I think he was the one, like we talked about the other day, really, that would probably have the most debate around it, whether people thought we should or we shouldn't. And obviously, when the news came out, that's just kind of been the one, really, that people I think have debated again, whether we should or we shouldn't have done it. And a lot of this just depends on what role you have in mind for him. I'm not talking about position the pitch. I'm sort of talking about more like ranking within the squad. Look, if you're re-signing James Brophy because you want him to be your first choice winger, I think that's pretty naive. If you're giving him another year or another couple of years because you've seen certain things in terms of what he can bring, and you see him more as like a utility player who could fill in at wing back, left back, on the wing at times, even centrally, then that's probably not a bad decision, I think. And look, it'll be remiss of us not to like acknowledge and actually praise the good work that he does do, because, you know, as much as I sort of joked and sort of poked Casper about it, like his ability to get us up the pitch, and I think even though his assist record is pretty bad, I saw, I think it was on the message board, someone mentioning that he creates about a chance a game, which is okay. Like it's not horrendous. Clearly he's not been, the output hasn't been there, in terms of goals and assists, but they're not the very big headline stats. They're not necessarily what football clubs look at when they make these decisions, I suppose. So yeah, I don't really have much of an opinion on it, to be honest. I think like if it's gonna be James Brophy as a squad player or someone to kind of fill in the gaps when needed, good. Because
Yeah.
but no, again, I'll go back to what I said about upgrading or not being able to upgrade. We're probably not getting better squad players than James Brophy.
Yeah.
So yeah,
Yeah,
we'll have to see if he signs it.
I agree. I agree with that. I think you sort of you can start to qualify how good a decision it is to offer James Brophy a new contract once we know a bit more about the transfer business we're doing around all of this retained list, right, in the summer. So it's about not necessarily James Brophy being in the squad, but it's about who is ahead of him in the squad. Because I think the important thing for me anyway with this summer's business, and it's something that I think we spoke about on Saturday and we'll speak about it again, is raising the floor of the squad level and raising the lowest quality, I guess, player in each position, making that better so our off days aren't as off as they have been this season. So Paul Digby and James Brophy can absolutely be in this squad, but for me it's just about who is ahead of them in the pecking order. Two players that probably, I'd say, I'm not sure, will be ahead of Brophy in the pecking order, Elias Kachunga and Sili Kaikai. Again, I think these are two interesting ones because I was anticipating us to keep one and not the other. Are you surprised that we've kept both of them?
Yeah, I am. For the same reasons you've just said, really. I don't think either of them sort of blew us away really at any point. Although I would say that at individual moments they were probably our sort of standout players. But in the context of the situation we were in, like I think Kachunga around Christmas was really, really good. You know, after Bonner went, frankly, obviously saw something to fight for. And then Kaikai, when we're in the situation around New Year, where we didn't have any centre forwards, like did well at Blackburn, got a goal. I think at Oxford he was really, really good playing centrally. And I think that they're both like obviously like capable at this level, but I just don't think we saw it enough last season. Maybe it's one of those where, you know, the way the season went and what happened throughout the season, we maybe didn't see the best of players like that because of the circumstances that we were in. But maybe with a bit more stability, maybe with another year, you know, because obviously it can sometimes take place a little bit of time to settle. Even if someone like Kaigo had been here before, like that was more than a decade ago. And maybe Monk thinks, you know what, these are players of good quality in a new system, maybe that kind of brings out the strengths in them, hopefully, they could be worth having, sorry. So,
Don't hang them.
yeah, no, not yet anyway.
See
Leave
how
that. Yeah, you have to wait at least until 10 games into the season to see how things are going, I
they
think, before you make that sort of
go.
drastic things like that. I guess the big disappointment is that it might leave me out of pocket with Kachunga staying, because we're going to have to make a big decision about whether to continue there.
Oh yeah, huge offer coming from UTAS or not. From
Yeah,
UTAS,
I might. I
from
think
Tom Walker.
we're going to have to negotiate based on how often we appear on the GIFs.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a conversation for another time. That's very much a conversation for behind closed doors, not for airing in public, even though I just
Of
have.
course. No, I think the one thing I would say about them too is that I think I'd be surprised if this year Monk doesn't try and, well, Monk is going to try and put his stamp on this team next year. And for everything I've read, he's always tried to play possession heavy football. Now, obviously, you've got to think about who we are in the context of this league, and I think that's going to look different to when he tried it at Leeds and other clubs in, you know, different contextually in their divisions. But I do think he's going to try and make us play with the ball a bit more, and I think we'll see him try and sign players to do that, especially centre mids, which I think everyone will be quite thankful for. And I wonder if Kachunga and Kai Kai players that will start to show a bit more, especially Kai Kai. He wants the ball at his feet. He wants to be able to run at players rather than playing on the break and like scrapping for chances and 25% possession and never seeing the ball. Maybe we'll see a bit more of them with the ball at their feet. But I guess the question is like, how much realistically of that are we going to have, even if Monk tries to implement it? It's still a big ask, isn't it, considering who we are in this league. So that's the one thing I'd say that's interesting about both of them. But let's flip to the other side of the spectrum, I guess, which is two players who I think we definitely would offer, have both agreed to offer contracts to, but two players who I'd be interested to see if you think will sign the contract, which is Mamadou Diop and Will Mannion. Let's start with Diop. Obviously, slightly disappointing that we didn't have a contract on him already, considering how he ended the season. But do you think he will sign a new deal?
I really hope so. The concern there is that there might be other clubs out there who have seen a defender rise through the pyramid, make a really good impact in League One, and think maybe there's something worth investing in there, and maybe other suitors might be able to invest more than we can. So yeah, I really, really hope so. I don't know what the chances are. Like you know, logic might dictate that if things are going well, you stay at the crease in a way. If that's an analogy that I could use, he's had such a good progression with us that maybe he should and might trust us to continue that. And Monk obviously really rates him, and Monk played centre half for Swansea in the Premier League for many years, so that's probably not a bad thing. Probably not a bad role model to be following and have sort of coaching you. But yeah, look, the flip side of that is that it's a competitive market, isn't it? And young centre backs are often hot property. So yeah, we'll have to see. But yeah, what can we do?
What can we do? I still think he'll stay. I still think for that exact reason that I'm not sure what other League One club is going to be guaranteed the amount of League One minutes he's going to get with us next season. And I think he'd be smart to think that he's broken into the team, basically. I think he starts the first game of next season currently. I mean, obviously currently we're a seven-a-side team at the moment. I think he thinks one good year here, you never know what that next step is. And I think that next step next season, if he has a good year, will be a lot higher and bigger than it would be if he had a go somewhere else this year. But I don't know who else is in for him. So, I really hope so. The other one I do really hope signs as well is Will Mannion. But I assume the big thing here is going to be whether that contract says you're going to be number one next year or not, right?
Yeah, probably. I suppose it's not something you can write into a contract, but assurances will have to be made. And I think you'd be like, look, we've offered him a contract. It would be mad to me if we'd said to him after the run of form that he'd been on, and I think he'd been pretty good towards the end of the season, at times really good and really important, to go, oh, by the way, Jack Stevens is going to be number one again next season, because he was crap before he got injured. So yeah, I think that's obviously what it'll rest on. And I'd like to think that it would be fairly obvious to anybody that if we've offered Will Mannion a new contract, it will be at least to start as our number one. And then it's like, well, look, there's someone that's going to be there breathing on your neck to take the shirt if things do go badly. So, yeah, I hope so. I hope so as well. I thought a bit like Kai Kai and with Kachunga, and a bit like the centre backs, and as we've discussed with the centre mids, I thought that might be a case of keeping one of them, and therefore, just because the way it's kind of panned out, Stevens would stay and Mannion might leave because he was out of contract. But no, I'm glad to see we're persevering with him. It's probably fair to say he came into the team at a good time to impress Monk to make this decision. So yeah.
Yeah, good on him. The other two offered a contract, Glenn McConnell and Amaru Kounda from the under-18. So hope to see both of them sign. Then here's a big one. Jordan Cousins. It's taken a while to get to him. Player option on game-related trigger. So I read that as it's up to Jordan Cousins. He's triggered a part of his deal in his contract that means that he gets the choice whether he wants to stay next season or not. What do you make of this, Tom?
I hate the idea that we've put a player option into any contract, because it shouldn't be their decision. It should be ours, always. So that's the first thing, especially with Jordan Cousins, because like the only doubt that we had about him was his fitness and how wrong we were.
But I guess that's the thing, right? Game related trigger. I guess we thought, well, if he gets to 35, we've got ourselves a brilliant player here, or
Yeah,
whatever. I made
but
that number up,
then.
obviously.
Yeah, but then the flip side of that is why are we giving the player the option of that? It should
No,
be on.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying that like that was probably the club's thinking that like if we can, if he's going to play that many games. Well, yeah, no, I see your point, but like
Yeah. So then, like,
make it a
if he
club
comes
option.
here, plays like 40 games, plays really well, and then goes, actually, no, I don't want to stay anymore. That's obviously bad for us, right? So,
But maybe, but it's better, you know, if we're trying to convince someone to come to the club, it's better. He's probably our highest earner, right? I guess it was probably an incentive for him that like, you know, your decision, your future next year is in your hands.
yeah, potentially. I guess that's one side of it. But yeah, I mean, I guess it might depend on what other suitors he's got. What other options has he got? I mean, look, let's make no mistake. He's had a really poor season. I think. Well, in terms of appearances alone, I think he'd be really happy. And I think probably a big priority for him would simply have been playing games, because obviously he's not played consistently for a long, long time. And maybe he was fearing he might never do that again. So that'd be the first thing. But yeah, I mean, his form at times was just terrible. I think particularly since the turn of the year. Really, really underperformed. I think he had a couple of good games, like around Easter, sort of as the days became a little longer and the sun came out, basically, as a lot of players did. But yeah, I mean, look, I don't want to go round and round again about my thoughts on how
Yeah.
Jordan Cousins has performed, because we've done it all before. But yeah, I would just reiterate what I've said before. I think if we go into next season and Cousins and Digby are starting choice centre mids, and we've learn absolutely zilch, and that'd be a real, real concern.
That's the crucial point here for me. I think the problem isn't necessarily having Cousins in your team. It's about who plays ahead of him or next to him. And you're spot on there. I think if Cousins and Digby start our first game next year, then that's a huge worry. Cousins by himself could become a brilliant player. I don't know. Like he's clearly got it in him. He's got so much pedigree. But it just depends who we play alongside him. And I think you've got to think about how we're going to split this budget up. And I still think he's probably one of our highest earners. So I would probably personally lean on the hope that he doesn't sign the deal, because I think it's a similar case to Ryan Bennett, that I think we could do better with that money given what we've seen this season. But clearly, it's up to him. So that's the situation. Under contract players made available for transfer. Let's go through these four together: Lancaster, May, Jubal Okadina, Lewis Simper. Surprised of these four?
I think the one thing I'd say is I'm a little uneasy that we announce our transfer list. I don't know, maybe that's just a bit soft of me. But like, I mean, what happens if they just no one comes in for them and they have to be part of the squad? It's like, oh yeah, we didn't want you, actually. Yeah, I think, like we said before, before the end of the season, like, the retain list is one thing. Who do you offer contracts to? Who do you release? But I think for me the bigger concern was that in certain parts of the pitch, particularly midfield and attacking midfield with Lancaster, we have players under contract who have not justified their place in the squad and have not done enough to prove that they're capable at this level, particularly this season. For Lancaster, probably over two or three, to be really blunt about it. So it's not a massive surprise to me. Okadine is a surprise, because I would still back these are players good enough. But again, like, we're talking choices here, and the choice maybe was you got Rossi, you got Okadine, and maybe we've gone with Rossi. That's might be a really simple way of just kind of analysing it and looking at it, but it feels like that might be what's happened.
He might very much have suffered from the rise of Mamadou Diop in this respect.
Yeah, potentially that's obviously another angle of looking at it. But yeah, I think it was imperative that we moved someone like Adam May on, for example,
Yeah,
and do move him on,
spot
because
on.
I think, again, maybe one that's been slightly harshly done by, because it's fundamentally a really bad injury that's kind of changed him as a player. But he's been nowhere near good enough. And for Lancaster, I mean, my God, like, there will probably be a train of thought from some people that he's never had the chance of running the team to prove himself. But I'm sorry, that's just like not the case. Time after time after time, we've sat there and gone, oh, I think Lancaster could have a bit in him. He could be a player that's got a bit in him. But it's 3 years down the line now.
Yeah.
Like, And if I want to get another little dig in at someone who maybe doesn't necessarily deserve it, I would say it's interesting to me that all the players that Bonner backed so heavily and gave new contracts to have been moved on. So yeah, that's another angle.
Yep, completely agree with all of that. Just to quickly run through the youth players, Akambi, Beckett, Finch, Sandiford, Yearn, as we knew, departing the end of their contract. Club option year activated on Dan Barton, Liam Bennett, Louis Chadwick, and Brandon Njoku. And then, as we knew, the lone players returned to their parent club. Ahadmi, Macaulay Bond, James Gibbons. I think Ahadmi everyone would have back in a heartbeat. I'm yet to be convinced by James Gibbons. I'm quite confused at the clamour to have him back, but I get that he works hard and he's quite a likeable fella. But I guess it depends what options there are out there, right, Tom? But he has also been released by Bristol Rovers, so he's available. Macaulay Bond, I think. Thank you and goodbye. Okay, let's move on to the next order of business. This one's coming from John. What are the pod's thoughts on scrapping FA Cup replays? Now, obviously, we've missed a mailbag over the last couple of months while we've been focused on, well, survival, I guess, pods around survival and not managing to make the time to do one. So we're slightly late on this story, but it's actually pretty good timing because today, 1st of May, the day that we're recording, football owners across the EFL and chairman have penned a letter to the government demanding that FA Cup replays are saved. They've written to the FA and to the Culture, Media and Sports Secretary, Lucy Fraser, calling for the games to be reinstated. I think Lucy Fraser's the MP for Ely. Anyway, they claim the move has been driven by top Premier League clubs and risks widening football's wealth gap. So this is obviously the news from a few weeks ago that the FA Cup replays have been scrapped, seemingly with no consultation to EFL clubs. Tom, this is huge news, and I know it's going to be tough for you to answer this question in its entirety. But what I mean, I know the answer to it, but just how much of a sort of disappointment, I guess, was this to you?
Yeah, I hate it so much. Like, I
really,
yeah,
it's horrible, isn't it? It really is.
To me, it's. This is probably going to be really cliche. It's probably something that's been said loads and loads of times on phone-ins and stuff, which obviously we try not to be. Maybe unsuccessful
yes.
at times. But like, to me, it's just like, it's an embodiment of a lot of what is wrong with modern football, particularly in England. And it's like, we're not even talking about like what was it? Like something like 700 clubs, are entered into the FA Cup every year. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but it's like 700, 800, something like that. Something mental. It's probably starting like now, the FA Cup.
Yeah, it starts the first weekend of August, right?
Well, there you go, right? So it starts like 4, 5, 6 months before the Premier League teams even have to think about it.
Yeah.
And we're not even talking about all the Premier League. And we're not even talking about all the Premier League, like all the clubs of the sort of top end of the Premier League. We're talking about like a few really influential people who've simply got too much power. And it's basically people like Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola who have hundreds and hundreds of millions of pounds of riches, like bottomless pits of cash to build a squad with. And like, they sit there and they cry, ask us, they have to go, they have to, in inverted commas, play in Europe on a Tuesday, then play an FA Cup replay or play an FA Cup or play a Premier League game on a Sunday, then play a Premier League a replay on a Tuesday. I would argue that if, like Liverpool have and have done in the past, if you draw with Plymouth Argyle at home, you deserve to have to replay them. That is on you. That is not on anybody else. It's not on a fundamental structural problem with the English game or a competition like the FA Cup, which is so storied and so historic. That's on you as a manager. You should be able to put out any team on any given day and go out and beat teams that you are better than. And that's why the FA Cup is so good. The angle that's obviously been taken a lot on it is about the finance of it. And, we know ourselves, just what an FA Cup run can do. Obviously the riches that were brought in from the Man United game, but and obviously the replay at Old Trafford there, but I don't really think that's the angle that bothers me too much, because like that sort of comes and goes. Like, we were fortunate enough to watch us piss away those that million very, very easily. So like that doesn't like last at all. I mean, it can do in some cases, particularly like the lower end of the pyramid, and even as you're getting down towards the non-league, like I can pay for new stands and whatnot. But for me, it's like, it's kind of the competition aspect of it. It's like, we've earned that replay. Like,
yeah,
when we played against Man United, we fucking earned that replay.
Yeah,
we
yeah,
played
yeah,
against
yeah.
Like 300 million quid's worth of talent. And make no mistake, if that had gone to extra time and penalties or just penalties or whatever, we probably would have lost, because that's how these things go. Like, we earned our chance to go and play them at Old Trafford. We gave it a really good go. Like, we gave a really good account of ourselves, and that was our reward. And that was Man United's punishment for not being able to beat a team that was four leagues below them.
Yeah.
And to just be able to just scrap that, because, and it is literally just a few people, it's a couple of clubs have whinged and moaned till the cows come home about the fact they have to do it, I think is really, really sad. And it's just, you can look back to things like when the under 21 teams were introduced into the to what is now, what is it, the Bristol Street
Bristol
Motor,
Street Trophy, Motors Trophy, yeah.
you can look back to that, and there were certain people that suggested that was the thin end of the wedge, and these teams would start making big structural changes to English football because they've seen that they can do it if they basically shove enough cash under the nose of the EFL and pressure them enough. And some people were like, "Well, they're never going to do that. Like, it's not going to happen. Like, there's no interest there for them." Well, and here we are, like what, 4 or 5 years later, and they fundamentally changed a really key part of one of the most famous football competitions in England and one of the most historic. So, I think it goes back ages. Like the Premier League is the Premier League. Like they're far too powerful. They can do pretty much whatever they want. The FA have got no control over it. And the other thing that's really bad that we haven't talked about, I guess, is that there was absolutely no consultation with the EFL at all. And we're only one stakeholder in that, by the way. We're looking at that from Cambridge United's perspective. But what about the National League? What about the leagues that go below that? There's loads of things. And I guess at the most basic level of the all hundreds of clubs that enter it in a competition like the FA Cup, everyone say should be the same.
Yeah,
Clearly not.
absolutely.
That's what it is.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of frustrating things.
No, absolutely. I think there's a couple of things that I wanted to add to that as well. And I think the first thing is that it's easy to sort of romanticize this. But the FA Cup, we are talking about the oldest cup competition in the world. This is proper heritage of football. It's a brilliant competition. And I think something that has really frustrated me about all this is the fact that Premier League clubs have made this decision, obviously seemingly without the consultation of anyone else involved in the entire tournament. But they've also made the decision for the rounds of the competition that they're not in. So they've made this blanket decision across the entire tournament. And I think, just to think about like Cray Valley Paper Mills this year, right? They earned a replay against Charlton. They earned the right to play Charlton again, and the TV money that the revenue that that replay will have given them will have been absolutely huge for them, and that's just one example that I've off the top of my head from this year, but there's plenty of examples of those rounds, the smaller clubs like this the money from this competition can be their lifeblood. And I think whenever I've ever had conversations with people at the club at United, the money from the FA Cup is huge, and the replays can be like a huge part of that. You talk about that million for Old Trafford. But the other angle to that, which I wanted to bring up, was almost just the memories. And I know that this is something that is so far away from the CEO of Premier League clubs' agenda. But like, Tom, me and you, like, I remember that memory of going to Old Trafford as like one of the fondest growing up supporting United. And like, that's all made possible because, like you said, we deserved to go there because we deserved that draw, that nil-nil draw at the Abbey to be able to take them to a replay. And then, who knows what could have happened if Elliot hadn't hit the post in the first minute. And then the last point I just wanted to make on it is that Premier League chiefs claim they're worried about fixture pileups as they progress in context as a champion of the Champions League. Now, this is honestly, for me, probably the most frustrating thing about it. A, they've got all the riches in the world to be able to create two entire 11s. If that was really a problem, like they could just have an FA Cup, they could have a whole Cup 11 that, like you said, should be able to beat probably teams at the bottom end of the Premier League, let alone teams in the Championship and below. So that's your point about Liverpool and Plymouth there, which I think is spot on. The other one, which I hadn't realised, which is this is a quote from the letter that's been sent today: concerns about a packed calendar do not stand up. In the last 10 years, there have been fewer than 10 occasions when a club playing in European football has been taken to an FA Cup replay. So there's your answer. Like, they're often too good to even go to replays. So more often than not, the quality shows, and that's the way football goes. It's a meritocratic sport. But if that team does hold you to a draw, of course you should go to a replay and play the game again. And then the third point is that all these clubs, and now this is a little bit old man shouting into the wind, but these are the same clubs that go on endless European summer tours, or sorry, further than that, global tours. To look at Newcastle United announcing their tour this summer, and they're away for like a whole month in July playing fixture after fixture after fixture. The summer series they've just started in the US, fixture after fixture after fixture. But obviously, money talks, and there's money in those for the Premier League clubs where there isn't the same significant amount of money for them in the FA Cup replay. So yeah, I think it's less the surprise of it, right? It's more the it just it's a reminder of the state of this game. And I think we've talked about the independent regulator a couple of times, but it can't come soon enough because decisions like this for a competition that should be as sacred as the FA Cup being made by the few, which will affect so many, is just such a sad state of affairs in our sport at the moment. Anything to add on that, Tom?
Yeah, just on fixture congestion, they play eight less games than us each season
Yeah,
in
well,
the
there's
league.
that as well. Yeah.
So, yeah, do the
I know.
maths.
Yeah. Okay, from the quite serious to the very light-hearted, Leon sent in this question. Can you name the best and perhaps worst non-British player to have played for United in your time watching? For me, it has to be Le Dieu, aka Lionel Perez, as one of the best. One of the worst, perhaps Reggie Lam or the Austrian player we signed under Leroy slash Renard, who never played for United but was a translator for them both. I'm laughing just because this is a guy I'd not heard of. Obviously, it's not my vintage. Tom, have you ever heard of Gilbert Prilaznig?
Have I heard of Gilbert Prelasnik? There's a
Yeah,
one-legged duck swimming circles. He's a Pope Catholic.
yeah.
Oh,
One of the finest Austrian centre halves.
please do not insult my intelligence like that. Gilbert Prelasnik. Oh, yeah, mate. I used to grow up dreaming of emulating what he's done in his career. And what, you know, I remember distinctly that day that we signed him, wherever it was we signed him from, and I distinctly remember being heartbroken whenever it was that he left, wherever it was that he left to. Gilbert Plasnik, how little we knew you.
There is going to be people listening to this who really do remember Gilbert Prelaznig, and they're going to send in some
Are
fond
there?
memories, I
Are there
hope. Yeah,
really?
I don't know.
No,
Well, Leon clearly remembers him.
he doesn't. That's No, he doesn't. Saying that Austrian bloke we signed isn't the same as saying Gilbert Plasnik.
That's true. That is true. Not your favorite Austrian, though, is it? Anyway, have you got any suggestions for this?
Yeah.
Should we start with worst? Because I think it's funnier.
Yeah, me too. Now I think the Renard Leroy years, they are an absolute hotbed of people for this category. And inevitably some of these will get lost. You know, you said it wasn't your vintage. I don't remember it particularly well. Too young, if anything, not for any reason.
Yeah.
However, the ones that stick in my mind are Abdoul Colty,
Oh, yeah.
who's of Moroccan descent. Left back, I believe. Don't think he was that good. That might be doing him a disservice, but I don't think so. Sully Seychelles, I think, is one that Casper would be probably screaming at as well.
Yeah.
Probably Jord as well. I think he was French. That might not be true, but I think he was French. Medialito
Yeah.
represented, yeah, Congo under
Oh,
21s, I think it was.
yeah. Sorry, can we refer to him by his proper name here, please, Thomas?
What, Donny?
Donny,
Yeah. Again, how little we knew you. The last one. Now, I think it is harsh because actually he played in quite a good team. But in the context of having a Brazilian footballer playing for Cambridge United, I'd like to say Magno Vieira.
it's a great shout,
Because when you are a lower league team and you sign a Brazilian footballer, you're like, wow, yeah, here we go. This is going to be good. And unfortunately, it just ended in heartbreak, and he was never heard of again. So
Yeah.
yeah, I think that one is harsh. But, you know, maybe we just haven't had enough people for this category, so he has to go in.
I've got a couple of extra options. Now, I think a couple of these, two of these fit into the sort of like James Holden, like who was that again? Do you remember Issa Diallo?
Yeah, big time. Mate, yeah, I remember Issa Diallo. I'm actually not joking as this time. I actually do remember.
No, I know. Same. I remember as well. He done his Achilles, I think, didn't he? The first year
Yeah,
in the
so
league.
he signed for us our first season back in the Football League.
That's right, yeah.
And he did the same injury that Ian Miller did at Wembley, but
Exactly.
worse. And he just walked off like nothing happened. Like
Yeah,
he's
yeah, yeah, yeah. It was at
like,
Wickham, wasn't it? And he just
yeah.
sort of he strolled off. I'm doing him a disservice just because I remember me and you thinking like, oh, there's a player here, and then sort of just like never saw him again. That was just sort of the end of it. So feels like a bit of a disservice, but I guess, 8 appearances. I'd forgotten he'd scored. I totally forgotten he'd scored. Do you remember against who?
Oh, this is going to really paint me out to be the sad case that I am. Carlisle at home.
Well done. Yeah, open
Yeah.
the scoring. Yeah, well done.
It
Well
was
done.
just as soon as you said Isidoro's name, I instantly was drawn back to that moment.
Yeah.
The worst thing is, I think I can remember what it was as well. I think it was from just outside the 18 yard
It
box. He drilled into the box.
was. I just watched it. Just to
Yeah.
prepare for this.
I fucking hate myself, mate, at times. I'm not going to lie.
Got Matteo Lanzoni in here.
Oh, that's fair. That's really fair.
Italian.
Speaking out your
Yeah.
own countrymen as well. That's
Yeah,
it.
yeah, yeah. You know, well, he's just
Yeah.
not good enough, is he? I've got Adriano Moke in here.
Yeah, nice.
Portuguese. I think
Yeah.
that qualifies. And I've got a guy that we've mentioned. I think any time we've had a question in about like worst player to do X, which is Jake Carroll. who is obviously Irish.
Yeah, that's
That
fair enough.
counts. That's
Where's
my
Jordan Jones from?
good question.
Hang
Scottish,
on.
Northern Irish, I think, mate.
Let's have a look. Let's have a look. Does he fall into this
He's
category?
Northern Irish.
The
He plays
Northern
for
Ireland
Northern I he
footballer.
plays for the Northern Ireland national team.
Okay. So for the purposes of this, he doesn't qualify, but let's just reiterate the fact that he was
He
pants.
was terrible, yeah. best ones, speaking of Irish, I think this is fairly obvious. Mr. Wesley Houlihan.
Yeah, yes. I've actually got one written down and it was Wes Houlihan.
That
Yeah.
was
Say no
it.
more. It doesn't matter. We've
It
sort of
doesn't matter.
completed.
It's
We've sort of
close.
completed in quotation marks foreign footballers when Wes Houlihan came and did what he did.
You're gonna kick yourself at this one. What about Kwezi?
Yeah, actually that is a shame. Yeah.
Your man Elias Katsunga?
Yeah.
Less convinced by that, yes, there.
I think Katsunga's going to have to go some way to be mentioned the same conversation as Kwesi Appiah and Wes Houlihan in terms of their cult status.
That's true.
Maybe he'll have the option next season. Who knows? Kwesi, oh, mate, every time someone says his name, you know what? Like, the more we get, like, sort of consolidated League One, and the more you start thinking back to the promotion year, that obviously been 10 years ago now, the more I look at Kwesi Appiah, I start to really disbelieve that he could do a job for us.
Yeah.
33 years old. I think he's been playing for Boreham
He's a
Wood.
Boreham Wood, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. And I must be honest, it doesn't matter how old I get or how much time passes, I've still got that naivety inside me, which just goes, got one more year.
Yeah. He'll always be that player for us every summer. Bring him back.
The one that
Always.
got away, like he really
Always.
was. And he
Yeah,
should have
yeah.
come back so many times.
Yeah. And
Oh.
we've been preparing obviously this week for our special pod that we're recording on Monday, looking back at the 13-14 promotion year. More on that to come. But I've just been watching a lot of the highlights from that year, and my God, what a player. What a player. Okay, here's a couple more. Dimi Mitov.
Yeah, it's a fair shout. Obviously, he's played international football recently as well.
Correct, correct. And one that was just the first one that came to my head, to be honest, was Jack Iredale, which, I guess you don't get more further away from Britain than Australia, so maybe our furthest flung player instead. Maybe it could have been Mitch Austin. Who knows, mate? Maybe we should do like an 11, a best and worst non-British United 11. Maybe that's something to do. And Gilbert Prelazny will definitely be captaining that side. I think it's fair to say.
No, he should
Tom,
be.
so he should, as he was always born to do. Tom, let's wrap this up. There's one bit of news that we haven't covered that I think we should just very quickly cover, which is the South Stand next year is becoming the family stand, and the South having will be designated for away fans. Just very quickly, what do you make to that news? Because it seems like a really good bit of business for us to, well, to sort of try and increase that home capacity even more.
We saw to our detriment the impact that having home supporters behind both goals can have away at London Road. I'm not saying the South Stand as a family stand is necessarily going to be as raucous as that end next was at Posh. But no, yeah, it's good, man. Like, I think, it's a really boring point to make after quite a good conversation about foreign players, but seating sells out quite quickly. So it's good to have
Yeah.
more of it.
Good facilities.
What is going to be funny is that we could feasibly be playing Birmingham City in the league next season. And they're going to have to sit in like some random bolted on chairs in the Habin, and they're going to have a terracing allocation of like 600.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, so it should be good stuff. I guess the
You
interesting question is, do we move the pitch a bit further to the South Stand?
Yeah, you did make a good point as well about what it might do to like our away allocations at like, for example, London Road, but that's all to be seen. Seems like a good move. Anyway, Tom, let's wrap this up for now. We'll have the mailbags back next season every month. We've got our end of season pod coming up next week, so you can look forward to that. Tom, in the meantime, thank you very much, mate.
Yeah, been a pleasure as always.